Good afternoon, Juno. It's 2:59 p.m. You're listening to KTOO 104.3. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for a Juno afternoon today. On the show, I'll be talking with photographer Mark Kelly, who was recently one of 15 winners in an international photography competition through the Smithsonian, which is actually really cool. I'll also talk with Nate Heck from Saga, who will focus on their winter obstacle course. Bill Merk will be here with a preview of this month's Poetry Slam on Friday. We'll hear about the Eagle Crest's Porcupine Lodge, which is yet to break ground. I think they're doing that in April. All this plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, some music, and more. But first, we've got National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government is taking the Catholic Church to court over more than $1.5 million in contested funds. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the government wants Catholic organizations to pay their share of the Indian Residential School settlement.
Recent documents filed with the court show the government is suing for $1.6 million. It says that money is what Catholic Church entities are holding on to for unauthorized and administrative fees. Ottawa says the church also pledged to raise $25 million as part of the agreement. So far, it has raised only $3 million. The Anglican, Presbyterian, and United churches have all met their financial obligations under the settlement deal, but Ottawa says the Catholic Church has not. One Aboriginal organization says getting money out of the Catholic Church is like trying to get blood from a stone. Natalie Kermol teaches Native Studies at the University of Alberta. She says that money is crucial.
If it goes to the Legacy Foundation, it will have an impact for future projects, for the families and for talking about the intergenerational traumas. And so any kind of money is important in order to remind people that we can't forget about what happened in the residential schools in Canada.
The church says Ottawa is not applying the settlement agreement in the way it was negotiated, and lawyers for the church say they will fight the allegations in court. The case is scheduled to be heard in a court in Saskatoon in June. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Supporters cheered after a bill to add 20 Alaska Native languages to the list of official Alaska state languages moved through a House committee Tuesday. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
Dozens of people testified on House Bill 216. Professor Lance Twitchell teaches Native languages at the University of Alaska Southeast. He greeted the committee in Tlingit.
We are not an English-only state, and we should never tolerate the embarrassment of deciding to be one.
Several teachers and students testified about the cultural importance of learning Native languages. Some tied it to efforts to reduce youth suicide in rural villages. Barrow Democratic Representative Benjamin Nagiak speaks Inupiaq. He's the only legislator who speaks a Native language fluently. Nagiak had a message for the kids who testified.
Keep talking your language because you have no one to tell you you can't speak it, as we did when we were growing up. You have no one who said you can't speak your language. We did. We have someone who said you can't speak your language. In this day and age, you don't have no one to tell you you can't talk your language.
The bill's prime sponsor, Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins, said he was moved by all the support. The bill now heads to another committee before a vote of the full state house. The bill has not been considered by the Alaska Senate. For National Native News, I'm Casey Kelly in Juneau.
In the New Mexico legislature, a compact to expand Navajo gaming in the state passed the House Tuesday. Supporters say the compact will provide economic development and create jobs. One of the largest tribes in the country, the Navajo Nation is located in the Four Corners region and already operates casinos in both New Mexico and Arizona. The compact still needs Senate and federal approval. On this day in 1858, Chief Leschi was hanged in present-day Washington. The Nisqually leader was charged with murder. The chief and others insisted he had not committed the crime. Tribes in Washington have held events to commemorate the martyred leader, which often include walks and runs. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun on the web at guesthousealaska.com.
Join us for Kawanak's 2014 Alaska Native Art Auction, Thursday, February 20th in Anchorage, Alaska. Ticket and reservation information is available by going to nativeartauction.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. It's 3.05 p.m. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host today, and I'm very pleased to be talking to my next guest, who is photographer Mark Kelly. That name may be very familiar to a lot of you here in Juneau, because he actually used to work here. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hello, Ken. Good to be here. Thank you.
Okay, and we were talking briefly before we went on the air about last night's aurora, and I was asking you whether or not you'd gotten any really good pictures of it.
I was worked really hard at it, and I was kind of out of position after looking on Facebook and seeing the guys who were the photographers, not the guys, multiple photographers who headed out the road. They did really well at Eagle Beach. I ended up starting in Juneau and then went to Menhol Glacier. The Menhol Glacier parking lot was full of people. And then I ended up at North Douglas about 11. It was pretty good, but it ended shortly thereafter.
Yeah, North Douglas was phenomenal. I got there with my wife right about 7 o'clock. And we were seeing quite a bit of activity over the mountains, right over top of the glacier, all the way out to Auk Bay. There was some curtaining. There was a lot of rippling going on, and it was just pretty intense for a while. It slowed down a little bit. We left about 8 o'clock and went to put on a second pair of socks and come back out. It's kind of hard to stand in the snow for over an hour. And when we got back out there, instead of 3 cars, which had been there at 7 o'clock, there were about at least 36 cars out there about 8:30. And we stayed for about another hour beyond that. But the display was phenomenal. It was really, really good. There's a lot of pictures. I had people that I know that were up in Fairbanks, one guy that I work with and know through the planetarium that's an aurora specialist. You know, he was taking photos up in Fairbanks and putting them on Facebook right away. So everything was filtering down to us. And also in communication with some of my wife's family in northern Minnesota, and they were seeing the lights really good through north and central Minnesota last night as well. So all in all, a pretty fabulous demonstration by Mother Nature.
And tonight's supposed to be okay, too, maybe.
It's a fairly good chance that we're going to see some, but the forecast is calling for mostly cloudy. Now, I didn't notice a whole lot yet, so we may get away with this because it'll be dark here in about another 3.5-4 hours. Just depends on whether the coronal mass ejection has gotten to us and is igniting the sky. Actually, what it does is it excites the oxygen and nitrogen atoms in the upper atmosphere. Hey, wait a minute. I'm talking about the planetarium stuff here. I need to talk about you. And let us know about this photography competition that you were in and just how stiff the competition was, because we had like 24,000 entrants in this.
It's put out by a quarterly magazine that nature photographers really appreciate. It calls Nature's Best. And they partner with Smithsonian, and they do a yearly photo contest, and as you said, there were 24,000 pictures entered, 50 different countries entered, and they had like 15 categories, and I won the overall top place for
Outdoor Adventure.
And
I don't want to steal your thunder, but I've looked through the whole magazine. It's great.
Wasn't even an Alaska picture. It was in Yosemite of my wife standing in front of a waterfall with 2 rainbows, and I've been watching this contest for years. I've been watching this magazine for years, and it's amongst nature photographers, it's considered the best. And if you look at this magazine, every photo, it's just such a treat to be in it. It's such an honor, and I'm just thrilled. It's like lightning striking to win a contest.
I know, I've gone
like
through
this.
It from front to back, and there was forces of nature section. There's like lava going off, and there's trees on fire that people were there and took photos of, and there was lightning striking, and is that the Grand Canyon? I think it's the Grand Canyon, but yeah, it's a timed exposure, but there's like 4 or 5 different lightning strikes, and wow, just about everything that you see in this magazine is impressive. It's quite a feat to be picked out amongst all of those as one of the 15 best.
It's like lightning striking. It's not going to happen probably again. Contests are so fickle, you know, you enter. And what is neat about this one, though, is they have it hangs in they make super large prints, and it hangs in the Smithsonian, the Natural History Museum. And they have a grand opening in mid-November, and all the winners are invited to come. And they have a big soiree, and they have like 300, 400 of the media people of Washington, D.C. are there for. And you get up and you receive your award, and you have to make a little speech, and it's going to be a little nerve-wracking, but it would be an honor just to be with all these people.
It's just an outstanding bit of work that's in the entire magazine. I mean, just some photos that you would have, any one of them is, you know, just an obvious outstanding picture. I'm sure everybody sent their best.
Yeah.
So you won in the outdoor adventures category. Were there any other categories that you had entered into? How many did you submit?
I submitted, I think, I forget, maybe as many as 10 photos. And what they do, the first round is they cut it down to the best 700. And I had 4 images in the best 700, which I thought was pretty good. And then they cut it down to the finalists in each of the 15 categories. And then one wins, and then they have what highly honored photos or, you know, runner-ups or whatever. And each category had like 4 or 5 runner-ups along with the winner. And so it's amazing. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can see the runner-ups that are in this magazine, too. It's just unbelievable, the photos that are in here. Just, I mean, every one of them is impressive. Now I was going to ask you, as far as photography, you started here in Juneau, did you not?
Well, I started up in Fairbanks. I went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks as a photojournalism student and got my first start at Fairbanks newspaper, the News Miner. And then I went out to Ithaca after graduating to Ithaca, New York, to shoot for the newspaper. And then came up here to shoot for the Juneau Empire. And more or less, I worked for them for 13 years and left. I came here in 79 and left in 93 to go out on my own. So I've been on my own for over 20 years.
Okay. And how has the freelance working been going out?
It's good. I've kind of come into this unusual publishing photography business, books and calendars, which has really carried me. It'd be very hard to be a freelance photographer in Juneau, Alaska, thinking you're going to compete with, you know, people in New York and wherever. So the publishing photography has really been an interesting kink or quirked, and it's worked out well.
Okay, and I'm one of your fans because I've got a couple of your books. The one that you did for Tracy Arm is a very interesting one. How much time would you spend on a work like that before it goes into publication?
Well, I've lost track, but I've probably been to Tracy Arm, I figure somewhere 50 to 75 times over. I first went there in 1979. When I first moved here, one of my first trips was to go to Tracy Arm, and I've been going almost every year since and multiple times. And when I Tracy Arm finally grew, you know, before you do a book, you have to figure if there's a market. You don't want to just make something
right,
and not have a market. And then, of course, with the tourism industry growing, you know, that book came out sometime in 2000. There were enough people to justify the book, and I'd been there enough that I had enough. But when I really decided to do it, I usually work a summer before, so I spent as much time as I could. And you know, you gotta get bears, you gotta get goats, you gotta get all the animals, and then you gotta get the calving glaciers. And
right,
it's a great job. I mean, just
multiple
go down
trips
and hang
on
out
the Adventure and, Bound and the Captain Cook. Those are two great boats. And yeah, I know Stevie's pretty good as far as
and the book's done really
boat
well.
Operator, yeah.
You know,
oh, it definitely has.
It's
yeah.
It's in its seventh or sixth or I forget. Multiple printings.
Yeah, same with your Alaska book. That one's has been definitely in multiple printings, available in hardbound and softbound. And
that book sold over 40,000 copies already. The Tracy Arm books have sold like 20,000. You know, these are photo books that are selling
right
in these numbers. It's really quite
gratifying. Oh, in the era that you think that people wouldn't buy books, you know, they're all, you know, taking pictures and grab something off the internet, that people are still buying books, especially somebody's photographs, art books, you know, it's impressive.
You know, I think these books don't, I'm not sure if they translate well into e-books, big photo books. But I think there's always going to be a book for your coffee table when you come back from a trip. At least as long as my generation, our generation is still, and that's a good another 10 or 20 years, I guess, I hope.
Okay, and I had a little bit of material to preview before the show here. Let's talk about the Alaska magazine and the section that you've got in here with the bears.
Yes, this February issue of Alaska Magazine features 8 pages of the pictures I took at Annan Creek down by Wrangell of the black and brown bears there. And I started going there about 4 or 5 years ago, and I have been there every summer since, and some as few as a day or two in a summer, and sometimes as much as a week if I can get the cabin. And I just fell in love with the place. It's one of the few places, it's not as well known as, say, Pack Creek or on Admiralty or, say, McNeil River. But those are one-species rivers. There's only brown bears at those places. Here you actually have black bears and brown bears on the same stream, and you can watch both at the same time, which is pretty unusual. It's one of the largest pink salmon streams in southeast Alaska. Excuse me. There's about 50 black bear and about 20 brown bear. And it's just this, you get there, and they have the Forest Service has a viewing platform for you, and it's just a three-ring circus of bears everywhere. I think I counted 22 bears at one time from the platform in just a 360-degree view.
Okay, and also I turned the page into, there's a shot in southeast Alaska of the, looks like the Mendenhall Towers here. Is that one of yours, too? It sure looks like it is.
Well, no, that's the Brotherhood Bridge picture, and lots of people have that. I don't think that's mine, but I have another one in there. But anyways, the bears, that if you ever get a chance to go to Wrangell, and it's beyond belief. I'm actually going back again this year. I have the cabin for 5 days.
So there isn't a big turf war between the brown bears and the black bears?
There's a huge turf war. And
It doesn't look like it from there. I thought, okay, is there anybody fighting in here? And it doesn't look like it. It looks like pretty orderly. Must be a lot of fish.
The brown bears rule. The black bears move. When they come on the river, it's very hard to get a picture of the two together because the brown bears come and the black bears leave. And then when the brown bears go, the black bears come back out.
I guess they know when they're out-muscled.
Yeah.
Okay, last topic I wanted to bring up was your calendar for this year, the 2014 calendar. The pictures in that one, too, are stunning. I love the calendar. It's great. It's hanging up at my work. So that's why I know I can see it every day. Pictures, the Sitka picture that you had for January, excellent. That was a beautiful one. Was that a long-timed exposure?
No, I was over there on an assignment for, believe it or not, to shoot a woman over there. Excuse me, my throat's clogging. Well, a woman over there who raises rabbits. And I got an assignment from a national publication that does rabbits. And so I was over there photographing her rabbits.
Taking bunny pictures.
Oh, taking bunny. I didn't pay to be there. It had snowed the night before, and it cleared beautifully. And I flew on this beautiful day. And that evening before I flew out to get the plane out, it was fresh snow, you know, like 2 feet on Sitka, just clear as a bell, and just went over and shot it as I was leaving on my way to the airport.
Yeah, it was one of the most stunning pictures that I've seen in the calendar. It looks like a Christmas card picture. Yeah. Really, just really beautiful. And then the second one is the February one where you've got a shot of the glacier calving that not many people get out to this glacier. So how was the hike to get out?
Well, that was actually in Yakutat.
That was in Yakutat?
That's Hubbert Glacier.
Right, okay. Right.
And that we took a boat to it. So I chartered a boat, my wife and I and some friends, and we spent – it's the Hubbert Glacier. It's the longest glacier in Alaska. It's like – it's either 76 or 92 miles. I forget. It's a really long thing. And it's the one that closes off every once in a while and creates all sorts of havoc. But it's one of the probably most active glaciers in Alaska. And we sat in front of the – going back and forth in this little 24-foot boat for like 3 hours and just calved constantly.
So more active than the Sawyers have
yes.
been?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But they don't have as big icebergs. So Sawyer's tend to have, Tracy Arm has a bigger icebergs because the South Sawyer, there's like 200 feet above water and it's like 900 feet of ice underneath. And so when it calves underneath the water, that's why you have all that blue ice in Tracy Arm. It's so famous.
Oh, yeah. That's gorgeous.
Because they get the shooters because they have such a deep glacier there, which is unusual.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I love that trip. That's just outstanding. Well, Mark, one other thing I wanted to say is the advent of digital photography and getting away from the film medium. What resolution do you shoot at nowadays, and did it affect your prints at all when they were blowing them up to basically what is poster size?
Yeah, you know, I started in newspaper black and white photography, then went to slides, and now I'm digital. And my new Nikon has 30. I shoot a camera that's looks like a regular old film camera, DSL, a digital, and it has 36 megapixels. Unbelievable resolution. It's just a dream, and I love it. And it's so sharp. It has such resolving ability that the pictures, a 5-foot print is no big deal anymore, which is hard to imagine.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So digital's really, at first I was a late adopter. I didn't really start until like 98. And every professional photographer I knew had already switched. I think I was the last one to go. And I'm not great on computers. And so it takes a lot of learning.
Okay. And you do have a website. So please let everybody know what the website address is.
It's just markkelley.com. So I get that EY in there.
Okay, so if you can't find Mark's work at Hearthside Books, and I'm betting that you can always check out his work online. Mark, it's been a great pleasure having you in the studio today, and good luck with all your photography in the future.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering family health care in Juneau since 1982. Valley Medical Care, a proud sponsor of Public Radio in Juneau. Information at 586-2434.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. It's 3:25 p.m. With me in the studio now is Nate Heck, and he's going to talk to us about SAGA's Eagle Valley Center Winter Obstacle Course.
All right.
Good afternoon, Nate. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Okay, and describe the event for everybody out there listening.
Well, the Winter Obstacle Course is an idea to get people out the road recreating, and it's geared for people that are new to snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. We have a great facility out there. I don't know if everybody is aware of our facility out at the Imelda Harbor area, but it's a great place to come out and recreate in the winter, and so we have the Winter Obstacle Course as a way to come out and do that. So we're offering a three-part adventure day, which is snowshoeing, the ropes course, and the cross-country skiing. And so people can come out and try that, and we can, you know, we'll teach you how, show you areas to go, you know, give you a map, and kind of cut you loose.
So this isn't really the Ironman. These three things, there's like breaks in between them, right? Or snowshoeing and then ropes and cross-country skiing. Or can somebody just participate in one event that they would like to do?
Well, it's kind of custom that way. You know, if people are really interested in just one event, you know, we can cater to that. We only have, you know, one to two staff available. So if people need somebody to kind of go with them, if they're new to it and they really want somebody to kind of show them how and, you know, navigate through the woods, we'd be happy to do that too. But also, if you just want to come out and put a pair of skis on and give it a go and try it yourself, you're welcome to do that. And then we have the ropes course, which we'd be at. We'd be able to belay people and they'd do a personal challenge on the ropes course.
Okay, so not anywhere near as intense as the Olympics, but we've got some pretty cool winter events that people can participate in. And what is the cost for people for the winter obstacle course?
Well, it's $25 for the day to try, you know, all three events. Or if we give a discount, $5 discount for, you know, parents and their kids. Or, you know, if it's a Big Brothers, Big Sisters pair, you know, anybody like that coming out. So, you know, we're definitely, you know, encouraging, you know, to get the kids out and to do some recreating in the wintertime out there.
Okay, and where is this located? Where's the Eagle Valley Center at?
And that's probably the biggest mystery.
You and I talked about that at first. It's like nobody knows where we're at.
Yeah.
So here's your golden opportunity. Tell them where you're at.
Yeah. So the Eagle Valley Center is in the North Amalgam Meadows area. And this area is just it's a beautiful area. It's about 200 acres of city land. And the building that we're in is the old Joe Smith dairy farm from the 1950s. And before that, the land was a homestead from the Ackerman family back in the mid-1800s. And prior to that, I think it was kind of a staging area for the Eagle River Mine. And so they used to park in the deep water out at Eagle Harbor. And then there was a horse tram. People probably know the old horse tram trail. Went from the deep water at Eagle Harbor out to the Eagle River Mine. And so there's quite a lot of history, and it's just it's a really beautiful area, you know, large meadows and lots of areas to explore out there. The building itself we run as a retreat and rental facility, and so we get people showing up all the time that are walking the trailheads and that have lived in Juneau for, you know, 20, 30 years, and they don't know that we exist because it's about a half a mile gravel driveway. To get to the facility, so it's kind of really tucked away. Our nearest neighbor's about a half a mile away.
You know, a lot of people think everything beyond the valley doesn't exist, but
yeah,
there's actually a lot more out there.
Yeah, and actually, you know, and for people out the valley, you know, we're only, you know, 20 minutes from the valley, so
right.
it's a great place to come out and to recreate in the winter. It stays colder out there because of our proximity to the glaciers out the road. So actually, you know, when we had that warm January, we actually still stayed pretty cold out the road, and we still had 2 feet of snow even through the, you know, warm January. Of course, it got bullet hard and icy at the end there, but and now it's looking great. You know, we've got some great snow conditions out there.
Okay, Nate, and again, tell everybody where and when the Eagle Valley Center Winter Obstacle Course is going to take place.
All right. So we are doing Saturdays in February and March out at the Saga Eagle Valley Center, right off of Amalga Harbor Road, from 10:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. And the idea is to try snowshoeing, ropes course, and cross-country skiing all in a four-hour period. But if you're curious of just trying one of the obstacles, you're welcome to come out and give it a try.
Okay. And your phone and email for anybody out there that's interested in more information.
You can contact me at 723-1547, or my email is evcpro@servealaska.org.
Okay, Nate, thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. It's the birthday of Carson McCullers, born Columbus, Georgia, 1917, author of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, a Member of the Wedding, and other books. It's the anniversary of the publication of The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan on this day, 1963. It's the birthday of the novelist Jonathan Lethem, born in New York City, 1964, author of The Fortress of Solitude, and other books. 1945, on this day, U.S. Marines began their invasion of Iwo Jima, small volcanic island 660 miles off the coast of mainland Japan, a small island about 8 square miles. William Manchester described Iwo Jima as an ugly, smelly glob of cold lava squatting in a surly ocean. An American Marine described it as hell with the fire out, but still smoking. The Allies wanted the island because it would be a good strategic base from which to bomb Japan, and the Japanese were well aware of that. And they dug a series of underground passages connecting deep caves and moved their troops and weapons into them, a complex 11-mile-long system of connected caves, bunkers, and weapons emplacements. Underneath the island's highest mountain, Mount Suribachi, was an installation 7 stories deep. On this day, 1945, 450 American ships congregated off the shores of the island, and a little after 9 a.m., the first Marine divisions made their way ashore. It was very quiet ashore. And then finally, the Japanese opened fire, and by evening that first day, more than 500 Marines were dead, 1,800 wounded. It was 4 days later the Marines raised the American flag on Mount Suribachi. It was photographed and became one of the most famous images of World War II. Of the 6 soldiers shown raising the flag, only 3 of them survived the battle, which lasted 5 weeks. 70,000 Marines invaded, 6,800 died. Out of about 21,000 Japanese, 20,000 were killed. Here's a poem for today by Jack Gilbert, entitled Half the Truth. The birds do not sing in these mornings. The skies are white all day. The Canadian geese fly over high up in the moonlight with the lonely sound of their discontent going south. Now the rains and soon the snow. The black trees are leafless, the flowers gone. Only cabbages are left in the bedraggled garden. Truth becomes visible. The architecture of the soul begins to show through. God has put off his panoply and is at home with us. We are returned to what lay beneath the beauty. We have resumed our lives. There is no hurry now. We make love without rushing and find ourselves afterward with someone we know well. Time to be what we are getting ready to be next. This loving, this relishing our gladness, this being puts down roots and comes back again year after year. Half the Truth's a poem by Jack Gilbert from his collected poems published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, travel the state's coast and beaches celebrating Alaska's shorebirds. At 8:30, the bird guys Vern and Bob track the peregrine falcon on its southern migration from New England to the Florida Keys. The Miller Center Forum doubles down inside the 2012 election at 9. Ongoing Gavel Alaska coverage of the legislature resumes at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
You're back in the studio for Juno Afternoon. It's 3:36 p.m. My guest now is Bill Merk, and he's going to talk about the, and I'm not going to pronounce this right, so I'm going to let you say it.
Very good. It's Wishkanadei. It's a Tlingit for parallel paths.
Okay, and please tell us about the event that you've got coming up.
Well, every month we have a open mic poetry slam every third Friday of the month, typically when we have the event. We're having the event this Friday, February 21st, out at UAS at the Rec Center. As usual, everybody's invited out, poets, non-poets, participants of any order, audience members. We're honored this month to be participating in conjunction with the Sound and Motion series out at UAS. It's an event that runs from January through the end of April. Every 2 weeks they have an event out there, and this is our turn to be out there and participating with them. So really looking forward to that.
Okay, and who is eligible to participate?
Anybody at all. We have a lot of local poets who come out every month. We have a lot of folks who maybe are a little bit shy about getting up in front of the microphone. They're always welcome. Anybody in town, we always have this open invitation to anybody. It's a very safe, very welcoming environment. We encourage diversity and voice and creativity, anything you want to bring. You're going to be in a room with a lot of people who are of like minds, who are very supportive. So.
Okay, and this is not only poets, but it says performers. What kind of performers
anything,
have you had before?
Anything at all. We haven't had a mime. So
yeah, that's a tough one. And we have a tough crowd to appeal to.
You'd have to be there, right? Right. But we've had comedians, we've had musicians, we've had poets, we've had storytellers, we've had all scope of performers.
Okay. And about what length of piece are you looking for from the people that show up and would like to participate?
Well, the event is divided into two parts. The first part is an open mic. Non-competitive part of the event. That's open to to 5 minutes of any particular art form you'd like to share with the audience. Typically, there are eight people. The first eight folks who sign up for open mic are allowed their 5 minutes to get up and do whatever they want. It doesn't have to be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be that long, but we kind of encourage people to keep it at 5 minutes at most. Then we take a break, and then when we come back, we have the competitive section, the poetry slam, per se. And that is, again, open to the first eight participants who want to sign up. Each poet has 3 minutes to perform. No music, no accompaniment. It's just the poet and their words. They can read it. They can recite it from memory, whatever they like. Three rounds. We go eight poets in the first round, take a break, narrow that down to four. It's a scored competition, so the four highest scoring poets move on to a second round. We do this again, and then the last two poets with the highest scores compete at the end, and then the winner takes home $25 and gets to be, you know, the poet of the month, whatever you want to say, and then they're invited back the following month to be what we call the sacrificial poet.
Oh, kind of try and you're playing like King of the Hill then, right?
Yeah,
somebody else trying to knock you off.
Pretty much what it is. Well, the winner will come back the following month, and what the sacrificial poet is the previous month's winner, if you want to call it that, him, her, that, the person who garnered the most points. They are used to help judges calibrate their scoring for the following month. So they'll be up reading their piece, and judges will calibrate prior to the following month's competitive portion of the show.
Okay, and you say this is a month-to-month competition.
This has been an ongoing event since 2010, October 2010. It was started with the hosts of Christy Erickson, who you may have heard of. She's very mm-hmm. prominent in the literary community here in town, as well as other focuses that she brings to the table. She and a partner of hers, Nahan, a creative writing partner, started the event in October of 2010. It's been going on a month-to-month basis since then.
Okay, and this is, you say you've got a DJ named...
Oh, Manu?
This guy? Yeah, okay.
DJ Manu. He's been with us from the very start. He provides sound effects, music, especially in the opening portion of the show. If you're looking for something, music to accompany your piece, Manu is there for that. He provides music during the breaks. We really couldn't do it without him.
He's sort of a moderator. He kind of moves the show along.
As needed, as requested. He also is. I'll give him a plug. He's a DJ on weekends up at the Viking, and I would encourage people to go visit him there as well.
Okay. And what is the deadline for people if they'd want to participate in this, since this is going to be Friday night?
Well, the sign-ups start at 6:30. We're running a little bit later this month. We're out at UAS at the Rec Center. So sign-ups at 6:30. Usually the sign-up list is filled in the first 5 minutes, and then we'll start the open mic at 7.
Okay. And the people that compete from month to month, how long has somebody stood as... quote, King of the Hill, unquote.
It usually changes on a monthly basis.
Okay, so nobody really gets to, like, stay top dog for long?
No, because the winner of, say, February Slam will become the sacrificial poet for March, and he or she won't compete.
Oh, so they don't compete from month to month.
No,
okay.
They take a month off and come back and do it that way. The winner not only takes home $25 and all the... handshaking and backslapping and hugs that go along with being the winning poet, but they're also qualified for an invitation to our October Grand Slam. And every year we bring the winners from the previous 12 months, 11 months worth of slams. They get invited to what's called the Grand Slam. And
okay,
then the
so
winner
like the Masters tournament that everybody comes in that
right.
The previous winners.
Right. If you've won or if you've been in, you know, if we can't get all the winners together, sometimes we get creative and find other ways to fill the slot for that competitive event as well.
Okay, Bill, and let everybody know again the date and time for this event.
It's this Friday. It's out at UAS. Sign-ups at 6:30. Our hosts this month are DJ Durego and Colin Calk. And again, Nathan Block, who was January's champion, will be the sacrificial poet. Looking forward very much to hearing him again this month.
Okay, and if anybody else wanted more information, where would they be able to find that?
Oh, you can find us on Facebook, pretty easy. Or you can send an email to junopoetryslam@gmail.com. You can reach us that way. Or any of the poets, you can usually reach us on Facebook.
Okay, Bill Merck, thank you very much for being our guest on a Juno Afternoon today.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate that.
This is Bird Note. The bird life of Ecuador ranks among the richest in the world. Just the size of Nevada, Ecuador is home to 1,600 species of birds. That's twice the number in all of North America. Can this splendid diversity be preserved? One to take up this challenge is artist and naturalist Paul Greenfield, a longtime resident of Ecuador. Greenfield has a unique knowledge of Ecuador's birds. He painted each one of them for the first field's guide to that country's birds. The book put ecotourism in Ecuador on the map in a big way. Greenfield has also helped create Ecuadorian conservation reserves, both large and small. He feels that smaller reserves of a few hundred acres may have the best chance for long-term success. Small reserves, such as the Mindo Cloud Forest Reserve, encourage local communities to play a full role in preserving and restoring habitat and enable farming to coexist with conservation. As Greenfield says, when you tie communities into knowing what ecotourism is about, and they begin to understand that the area and the birds belong to them, it builds pride very quickly. It's a duet, like these toucan barbets we're hearing, where each partner has an important role. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority encourages businesses and organizations to learn more about employing Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions. When you hire a Mental Health Trust beneficiary, you're not just providing a job. You're providing an opportunity for them to showcase unique skills, a strong work ethic, and a desire to succeed. Learn more at mhtrust.org.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. It's 3:46 p.m. You're listening to KTOO 104.3. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host. And with me in the studio now are a couple of returning regular guests, Drefa Clow and Matt Lillard from Eagle Crest. And they're going to be updating us on the Porcupine Lodge, which has yet to break ground, but they're going to give us a little bit more information about it. Matt, Jeffra, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, we've got a great project coming up, and what was billed as the Eagle Crest Learning Center when it was put up for a bond vote back in October of 2012 is now we're proposing to call it the Porcupine Lodge, and kind of feeling through that name, and it's one that we're really happy with as a name for the facility, and it's the new building that's going to be going up right near the Porcupine chairlift and learning area. And it's going to be a great new facility for us, about 9,000 square feet, and we're going to be breaking ground on it April 14th, the day after we close, with a really tight timeline for building, hoping to have it done by next season. So it's a really big next step for Eagle Crest. It's going to house a lot of great facilities that Jeffrey can expound upon and really take Eagle Crest to the next level as far as being able to serve the Juneau community and the skiing population of Southeast and hopefully the rest of the United States as a whole.
All right, Jeffra, take it away. Tell us what the Porcupine Lodge is going to have in it.
Well, it's going to be a two-story building, and as Matt says, it's going to house quite a few different departments. It'll house all ticketing, so if you want to go buy your lift ticket from now on, you'll buy it, or next season, you'll buy it at the Porcupine Lodge. It'll house snow sports school sales, the retail shop, the repair shop. Eagle Crest is the only full-service equipment repair shop in town. So we're going to have a much expanded repair shop, a lot more room, some new equipment. And then upstairs we'll house a much-needed larger rental shop with a much better flow, a kids' learning area, and also an adaptive area. And the neat thing about this building is when you go and rent your equipment, you'll be able to walk outside right slope side. You won't have to walk up any stairs or up any great big hills. You'll just be right on the slope side and ready to go to the learning area or to the chairlifts.
Okay, and how's everything been going this season?
Oh, it's been a great season. We just got done with a great amount of snow.
Yeah, we went through a pretty long stretch of first some rainy, warm weather and then some cold, sunny weather, and it was looking a little bit bleak on the mountain for a bit. But about a week ago, it started snowing, and last weekend was a tremendous weekend of skiing and riding. We picked up over 30 inches of snow coming into last weekend, and all the powder snow is back. It's nice and soft, and people came out in bulk last weekend, which was great to see, and then we picked up another couple inches on Monday night. So we're going to go back into our regular schedule of Thursday through Monday starting tomorrow and looking at another couple relatively cold temperatures in the mid to high 20s and sunshine for the weekend. So it's going to be another great weekend of skiing and riding, and it's really setting us up great for a fantastic spring skiing season. That's when really some of the best skiing and riding in Juneau is in the spring. We've got longer days, great weather generally speaking, and hopefully it's a nice snowy one as well. So we're really looking forward to it. Not only are we working on the Porcupine Lodge and getting that ready to break ground with the contractor in the middle of April. But before then, we've just got a lot of fantastic events coming up. Spring is a great time to come up, whether it's learn to ski or just enjoy the snow and really enjoy everything that Eagle Crest has to offer.
All right. And have you had a lot more interest in winter sports since the Olympics has been on?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of excitement with the Olympics. I know all the staff and lots of people up there are talking about it, and we had a great event last weekend. Hopefully everybody got up to see the fireworks and the winter fireworks spectacular. Mm-hmm. Certainly like to thank all of our sponsors there that helped us out and the Juneau 4th of July Fireworks Committee that helped with that event as well. And when we did that, we also were streaming the Olympics in the base lodge leading up to the fireworks, and just a lot of people were really excited to watch that happen. And it's just great to see all the sports that we love. That and a bunch of ones that you don't generally get to see on TV, like curling or bobsled or luge, happen. So I think it gets everybody really excited about being outside in winter, which right. is what Eagle Crest is all about.
And I think there's because of the Olympic, there's some new awareness, enthusiasm for, oh, maybe this is the time I should learn how to ski or learn how to snowboard. So we've seen a lot of new people to the sport, both youth and adults. And if you're interested, now's the time. We just got a huge amount of new snow. Conditions are perfect, and you can find more information on learning to ski and snowboard at skijuneau.com.
Okay, and I noticed that most every run that you have listed on the website is open now.
Certainly. With that new snow, it came in the right way and packed down really well. So just about the entire mountain is open. I think only one trail in steep chutes isn't quite open yet, but the rest of it is skiing extremely well. I think anybody who was up last weekend can certainly detail that out, how well it skied, and I think it's going to be the same story again this weekend. We've also got a lot of great events coming up that Jeffrey can expand upon.
Yep, so this weekend on Saturday, we've been working with GCI on new cell tower and
This is an unbelievable opportunity. So please tell everybody what GCI is going to be doing.
Well, GCI is celebrating, and we're very excited to be working with GCI, but we have wireless coverage at Eagle Crest and also 4G LTE service with TurboZone premium Wi-Fi hotspots all over the day lodge. So in celebration of that, it's GCI Day on the Mountain. So if you bring one canned food item up to the mountain, you can get a voucher from GCI for a free lift ticket. And all the canned food items will be donated to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank.
A very worthy cause, and this is an unbelievable opportunity. Somebody can ski for a can of beans. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's so great to have cell service up there, and it helps all of our guests and our operations, and it's just comforting to know that if you need to reach somebody or you need to call somebody who's up there, that GCI has really stepped up to the plate and partnered with us to get that cell tower up there. And also having the Wi-Fi service and the TurboZone premium service in the day lodge really helps out, you know, whether it's people that just didn't feel like skiing all day, or there's a lot of parents who might not ski, that their kids are out skiing and they can enjoy that free Wi-Fi and really fast Wi-Fi in the base lodge. So it's going to be a great day to come out, and we definitely want to thank GCI for all they've done to help build the infrastructure and make the experience that much better at Eagle Crest.
Okay, and I heard a rumor, but this is unsubstantiated, that the Porcupine Lodge is going to have a Wendy's in it.
That's a pretty good rumor.
That's a big no. Okay.
No.
All right.
But
it's wishful thinking.
Yeah, but it really is going to be a great facility, and it'll vacate some space in the lodge that we're going to convert into day lockers and just more space. So
yeah,
it'll be great for all the users of Eagle Crest, whether you're a longtime pass holder or a first-time user to the mountain.
And everybody go to the Eagle Crest website. You can actually see the plans for the Porcupine Lodge. They're posted on there as well.
Yep, skijuneau.com, and that'll give you all the updated conditions. And check out our events, because as Matt said, March is full of some great events happening.
Okay, Matt, Jeffra, as always, it's a pleasure having both of you in the studio. And the Porcupine Lodge will not break ground until April, so that facility is hopefully usable for next season. And I guess the contractors will have their work cut out for them hauling everything up the road into Eagle Crest. That's kind of a trek.
Yep, they certainly will, but
that's a lot of stuff to move.
It'll be a busy place up there this summer.
Certainly. Thanks again for being our guest in the studio today.
Thank you.
blue sky. Please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
And you're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. It's 3:58 p.m. on Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. Tonight's forecast is calling for mostly cloudy skies with some scattered snow showers, lows in the mid-20s, and southeast winds at about 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with isolated snow showers, highs around 31, and light winds becoming westerly at 5 in the afternoon. Thursday night, still mostly cloudy with a chance of snow showers. If there is any luck at all, maybe we'll see a little bit more aurora activity here in the capital city and throughout southeast Alaska this evening. And now a public service announcement. The Juneau Affordable Housing Commission will be meeting Wednesday, February 19th, that's tonight, at 5:15 in the City Hall Conference Room 224. For more information, contact Jessica Beck at 586-0617. And tomorrow's guests on a Juneau Afternoon, well, Shauna Strausser is going to be hosting, but they'll talk with Todd Hunt from Opera to Go about their upcoming presentation, Banu. We'll get details about Saturday's Zippity Doodah family concert with guest Rhonda Gardner. Robbie Lewis will be here to highlight the gospel workshop and Sunday performance. Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more again tomorrow, Thursday, 3 p.m. on a Juneau Afternoon. This is KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from Corporation for Public Broadcasting and viewers and listeners like
you.
We're
crushing the pavement and, you know, making stones and rocks to be thrown into police in case violence were to resume.
But for now, a pause in the fighting in Ukraine's capital.
It's Wednesday, February 19th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, the latest from...